Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you with us. And I have a very, very special treat for you. I know I go on and on about our guests because, well, doggone it, they are special, right? They are very good. And we're real careful about the folks we have come on the program and that talk with me. And of course, we talk about a lot of financial subjects. And I will, though, be very, very candid and tell you that I like to pull just about anything I can underneath the financial tent to make it an interesting program for you. So I hope you continue to listen, and I hope you agree with that statement. And toward that end, we like to get on authors, and especially if it's stuff, you know, just a little bit off the beaten track, or, again, not directly tied to what did the stock market do today, because I can do that for you. So I'll have other folks come on the program. Well, we've got a great guest lined up for you today. Steve Barry has been on the program with us before, and he is a very well-known author. In fact, he has a lot of accolades and accomplishments to his name. His books have been translated, get this, into 40 languages with over 17 million printed copies in 51 countries. His latest book, The Patriot Threat, is a very interesting book, and we'll get into it in just a second. His website is steveberry.org, and Steve has, again, been well-regarded. His big focus is on history, historical fiction, and it's really at the heart of everything that Steve writes. He shares his passion with his wife, Elizabeth, and that led them to create History Matters, a foundation dedicated to historical preservation, and since 2009, Steve and his wife have raised more than $750,000 through lectures and receptions, luncheons, and his popular writer's workshop to help support this organization he founded. So we're going to talk about several things on today's program, the book and philanthropic charitable opportunities about how you can go about doing this and maybe take some of what Steve's learned along the way about how you put your money to use if that is your desire. And we're also going to sneak in a little bit about taxes, which is always fun. Steve, welcome to the program.
Great to be back.
All right, excellent. Well, listen, we can start with any of that, but I love what you do, and I confess to Steve before we started, ladies and gentlemen, that I have a lot of respect for authors after taking a year and hiding 50 Fridays at my house to write the two books I've written. But for somebody who does it, your goal is to pop out, what, one a year, Steve?
One a year.
All right, okay. All right, well, that's good. Well, listen, I'm excited about this latest one. I love the theme because, of course, this has been a reoccurring theme over the years. It's very politically charged, and that is, of course, the subject of income taxes, and every now and then there'll be the latest salvo or attempt to declare them illegal, voluntary, or something else. And in your book, I've read kind of the synopsis, and I'm looking forward to sitting down, holding it in my hand here, sitting down and with some quiet time to read it. You really delve into this in a real deep way, this whole question of income tax, and you've turned it into quite the story.
Well, it made it for an interesting thriller for my character, Cotton Malone. The 16th Amendment's fascinating because it was proposed in 1913 by the Republicans at the time, and it was designed to fail. It wasn't supposed to pass, but it passed Congress, and then it went out to the states, and it was ratified. But folks have been arguing for decades that the ratification process was tainted, that there were problems with ratification. And the way it shakes down, by the way, is you only have void, if there's problems with six states, then the amendment would not be ratified. And from the research that folks have been doing on this, there could be problems in as many as 12 states with the ratification of the 16th Amendment. It's a fascinating idea. It made for a great thriller. I'm not saying that the taxes are void and things are illegal and all that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there's an interesting argument of things that happened back in 1913 that are still relevant here today, and this book explores those, and I think the reader is going to be very fascinated by, wow, I never realized that.
Well, when somebody, help me with this, Steve, because I've always wondered this, when somebody's reading, you'll be the guy to answer this, when somebody's reading historical fiction, is that the right word, first of all?
Well, for me, it's an international suspense thriller.
Okay.
It's what it is with a historical hook to it.
Okay. Yeah. Whenever we're reading this kind of novel, how do we keep it straight in our head what is historical and factual and then where you're then putting the fiction around it?
My book. Real easy.
Okay.
Because I have a writer's note in the back of the book.
Okay.
I spend about a week writing that writer's note, and I go through every page and every paragraph, and the writer's note's going to tell you what's true and what's not.
Okay.
So then my case, you're going to have that at the end of the novel. Please, please, please don't read it first, though.
Okay.
It will give away the entire book. But when you're done, when you read it, and here's what's going to be shocking to you. You're going to think something's false.
Oh, boy.
When it's really true, because I keep it about 90% accurate.
Wow. All right. Well, that what do they say? Life is stranger than fiction. And but what an interesting topic, because this isn't a recurring debate. It is, and if they ever, somebody ever were able to make the argument strongly enough, you know, then I am sure when that started to build momentum, there would be some way of...
It would be devastating.
Yeah, it would be devastating.
Yeah, because we get 91% of federal revenues come from income tax. And that's what the novel deals with. One of the characters calls it the cleverest weapon of mass destruction ever devised, because you could actually defeat America by not blowing it up or any of that. You just bankrupt it.
Mm.
And if you can cut off income tax, if you could somehow show that the federal income tax has legal problems to it, yeah, you'd have some very serious problems. And it made, like I said, it made for a really great thriller, a very interesting thriller. This whole book takes place under 24 hours. So it happens.
Wow.
Everything's happening really, really fast in this novel as this thing begins to become exposed.
Is it set in a particular time period, just current day?
Yeah, it's current day and,
okay,
and right now, and Cotton Malone gets caught up in this, and like I said, it happens, you know, everything's just bam, bam, bam as this thing sort of unravels on him, and they begin to realize they've got a really serious problem. The bad guy in the novel is a North Korean. I'm exploring some aspects of North Korean society, particularly the North Korean death camps, which a lot of people know very little about, but they do exist. There's 200,000 people interred in those camps,
So
I wanted to bring some attention to those.
Well, that's in and of itself an excellent point and agenda. And what a stretch for a North Korean leader to be portrayed as a villain.
Well, and he's an interesting villain, too,
yeah,
because I modeled him a little bit after a real-life individual. You see, the current leader of North Korea was really not intended to be the leader of North Korea.
Right.
His older brother was supposed to have that job. But his older brother got caught trying to sneak into Japan to go to Disneyland with one of his children. And he embarrassed his father, who disowned him. And that's how we got the guy we got now.
Yeah.
And so this explores some of that rivalry and some of what's going on there. But I often wondered, I said, you know, North Korea really, to be honest with you, poses little to no threat to America. It's just a small little isolated regime in the middle of nowhere which has no real capability of really hurting us. But what if they could come across a weapon that could really hurt us? And so the 16th Amendment becomes that weapon.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, Steve. I love what you're doing here. And it really strikes at the heart of some of our biggest, of course, fears about, you know, attacks from overseas, and also some of the things that are also, as I said, political hot buttons and could be, you know. And I guess I'm an eternal optimist, and right or wrong, I always think, well, if something like this did happen, gosh, there'd have to be a way for it to be resolved in some way that wouldn't blow apart the country. Well, but you know what? Sometimes that doesn't work that way.
No, it wouldn't. Imagine if it was voided. How would you replace it? Well, you could replace it with something, but that takes time.
Right.
And by the way, the federal debt is accruing at the rate of $1 million a minute. So every minute you delay, another $1 million in debt. It would take months to resolve this issue and get it repaired. You'd be bankrupt by then. You'd be completely bankrupt if you cut off federal revenues, all federal revenues. And it's just a little interesting hypothesis. As I said, not saying it's true, not advocating any of that, but it just made for a great thriller.
Well, and Cotton Malone, now he's been in several of your books. Is he? He's still up for the task. He's got to be getting old and up in age by now.
He is not aging anymore. He stopped aging about four books ago.
Okay.
So that happens when a series catches on.
Right. Of course.
I mean, like Dirk Pitt's, you know, been around 40 years. He's still the same age. So that's what happens. I realized about four or five books ago that I needed to stop his aging process.
Okay.
So he's kind of stayed around 47.
Okay.
And,
that's a great age.
Yeah.
Great
age. He's just going to kind of stay right in there and age very, very slowly so that I can keep him around a while.
That's excellent. Well, if you could write that book, Steve, boy, we would all sign up. You'd have 330 million purchased on the first
That's
day.
That's true.
Good stuff.
In fiction, you can do it, though.
Yeah, well, listen, it's all good. Steve Barry, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest, author and philanthropist. The book is The Patriot Threat, newly released. Exciting and interesting, relevant, and I'm looking forward to getting my quiet time to read the book myself. SteveBarry.org. And we're going to grab a quick break. We're going to come back with Steve, and I want to talk a little bit about the other side of this, which is some of the philanthropy and things you've done, Steve. So stay right there, folks. We'll be right back.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary, a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. A fiduciary also means an advisor should recommend products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance company or investment company tells him he has to sell. Next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary? Yes or no?" If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer's probably no. This public service announcement is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Barry on the line with me, author and philanthropist. And we're going to get to the philanthropy part in just a second. The Patriot Threat is Steve's new book out and deals with some interesting subjects that are very current for his Cotton Malone character, who we've learned now is an ageless gentleman that continues to work hard to solve these mysteries. And I want to go, Steve, if we can, to a little bit of the philanthropy part of what you do. And we're not going to be asking folks to call in and donate money on this program. So hold on, folks. Don't go away. But this is an interesting subject because, you know, there's nothing wrong with talking really forthrightly and actively, Steve, about the ways we decide to help with either programs or people or efforts to preserve things like you've done with History Matters. And I'd like to learn more about it because I think it could serve as a great model for folks out there listening to our conversation about what they might want to do, how they can get involved with something, how they can support things, and how they make a choice about that.
Yes, and we created History Matters, Elizabeth and I did, about 6 years ago. And we don't write checks to people. That's not what it's about. Philanthropy can also be about your time.
Right.
And so what we do is we offer our time to communities to help them raise money for historic preservation. We will go into a community and we'll do maybe a dinner where you pay to come to the dinner, and all of those proceeds go to the Historic Preservation Project. Or we teach our writer's workshop, which is 4 hours on the craft of writing. Buy your way in with a contribution, and all of that money goes to the project. Elizabeth and I never charge to go anywhere. We never charge expenses. In fact, we pay our own way to go. And so far, we've done, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 or 80 projects around the country, and we're closing in now on $1 million raised. We have some better figures than some more updated figures, and we're closing in now about $1 million raised for various historic projects around the country. So philanthropy can take a very different way, and for us, preservation is a local thing, and so one of our missions is to bring awareness to it and to get local communities excited about preserving what they have in their community.
Yeah, because it really has to be, you got to do it from a ground up or grassroots effort, that it's not some federal overlay. This is something that people need to do in their own communities.
Oh, yeah.
And so this allows you to go out and it creates an opportunity to help people. I love it.
It does, because no one's going to do anything for you except yourself. There's no money for historic preservation from governments. It's not coming. You're going to have to raise it yourself. You're going to have to do everything yourself. This is one of the things we try to teach the community.
I like it. I think it's good. What do you say to folks out there who, you mentioned the fact that it doesn't have to be money. It can be time and things like that. What do you say to people who want to support something, but they're not sure where to start?
Well, you have to look around for what you're interested in, what you're passionate about, and you look around in your community and see, is anyone doing that? If they're not, then you may need to start that initiative yourself. In our case, we were traveling around promoting the books, and we began to see that there's no money for historic preservation anymore. It's gone across the board. We saw this over and over and over again at places we would visit. And finally, one day, the idea hit us, well, what can we do to help folks raise money? So you really have to sort of just pay attention, see where the need is, and then be a little imaginative.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. The more unique you make it, the better, right? Differentiate what you're trying to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And uniqueness is great. And that's the cool thing about History Matters. The writers' workshops are very popular. We've taught around 2,700 students now. They're very popular across the country. It's 4 hours of very intense teaching on the craft of writing. It's very interesting things. You're going to learn pretty much in 4 hours what I learned in 12 years.
Wow.
I kind of whittled it all into together. It's a very intense course that all who have taken it have really enjoyed it.
That's excellent. And, you know, you're obviously tapping into your skills and your gifts as a writer. That's also something people need to keep in mind is that they want to look at, you know, what talents they have to put to use in whatever
sure.
philanthropy or charity they want to get involved
yeah,
with.
You have to do what you know. It works, you know, if you're doing something you have no clue about, it's going to be very hard to make it happen. And one of the things we want to do is we want to get local communities excited. So we try to set programs in place that we can do that. And like I said, so far, the money's been put to very good use. There's been a lot of really important things that have been preserved over the last 6 years.
Excellent. And I guess really related, I was going to kind of tie this in, and that is for folks that, well, before I go to that, let me make one observation. You know, you made the point about do things where you've got the skills and, you know, don't do things that you're not good at. There's always a call for volunteer work in my local community, Steve, and to, you know, pick up a hammer and go help build a house. And I say to myself, you know what? That's not me. I'm not really handy.
Right.
Now, if there's something, you know, where I could provide some pro bono or help people with their finances. Now, hey, you're talking my language, but you got to make sure you stay within your skill set. Right. Otherwise, it's going to be difficult.
It's hard enough to do it when you're doing what you know. Imagine trying to do it when you don't know.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. Well, and the last thing I was going to say about the philanthropy part, Steve, was that, you know, you don't have to go and try to figure all this stuff out on your own. One of the things I know you did when you wanted to get started was you went and found a mentor.
Yeah, I mean, you go and you find someone who's done it before. In my case, I went to a writer, David Baldacci, who was doing Wish You Well, and he deals with literacy.
Okay.
And I learned a lot from David. David taught me, you know, I watched how he put his foundation together. I watched how he organized it. I learned from that, and then I put my own touches to it. So yes, you find someone who's doing it well and go and learn from them.
Makes sense to me. I like that. If you're just joining us, Steve Barry's on the line with us. The Patriot Threat is Steve's latest book, and you can take a look at his website, steveberry.org. We'll be right back after this quick break.
What if in the time it takes you to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? Well, if you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. It's as simple as that. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? And there's no cost or obligation to meet with David. All you need to do is simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com for more information.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Barry on the line with me, author of The Patriot Threat. And that's just one of several books that Steve has written. And we've got, good grief, 17 million copies of his books in 51 countries, 40 languages. 2010 NPR survey named The Templar Legacy one of the top 100 thrillers I've ever written. And I just think it's really cool to have an author like you on the line, Steve. Thank you for taking some time with us.
Oh, it's great to be.
Yeah, it's very cool. So this may be a loaded question, but are you already on to writing another one? Are you always got one on the back burner that you pull to the front?
You actually stay a year ahead.
So, okay.
So I've actually finished next year's book already and
wow.
turned it in. So I'm actually writing right now the book that will be published in 2017. Which I'll turn in a year from now.
Wow.
So you stay 1 year ahead of yourself.
All right, I like that. I've been accused of getting ahead of myself, but you really do it.
Well, you have to because it takes a year to get the book ready for publication. So they need that time to have it all put together. So it's good to stay, to keep ahead of that. That way there's no surprises.
I like that. Well, we'll get back to the present, the Patriot Threat. The central themes of the book, of course, is about the legality and validity or whether it was ratified or not, the 16th Amendment dealing with income taxes at the federal level. Where did you get your research? Did you tap into existing resources that were out there or have to do some original research, combination?
I came across a lot of it. There's a lot of these theories on the Internet, but there was one in particular. There's a book written out there. It's called The Law That Never Was. And it's a book where a gentleman went around to all of the states where the 16th Amendment was considered, and he researched the actual ratification of the amendment in the official records. And he came across some surprising abnormalities in the ratification process. States that said that the federal government says ratified the amendment actually did not ratify the amendment.
Mm.
There was a lot of inconsistencies in it. It's a very interesting argument. It's one that's been tried to be put forth in the federal courts, but the federal courts don't want to hear it for obvious reasons, probably.
Sure,
they don't
sure.
want to get into that. But that sort of intrigued me when I took a look at that book, and I thought, well, you know, make for a great novel, and it did.
Did you run into any pushback? You know, when you get into a subject like this, it's so contentious.
I haven't had that because
okay.
by definition, you know, it's a novel, which
right.
means it's not real.
Right, right.
So, you know, I'm in no time we're saying this is real, but I am saying that the research that gentleman did is fascinating. And there are some interesting questions raised by it, and the lawyer in me began to pose those questions. And those questions are raised in the novel.
All right. I like it. It's good stuff, and it makes a lot of sense, and it makes for, of course, a thriller, and maybe this one will also win another award, Steve. How often do you see books like this? I mean, what's the competition like to get recognized by some of these higher levels of accolades from different organizations?
Oh, it's tough out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, to get yourself noticed and it's hard. The longer you stay around, you get noticed a little bit more. But we give it our best shot. I try to come up with something interesting, something fascinating from the past, something lost, something forgotten, something real. In this case, the 16th Amendment's ratification back in the early part of the 20th century. And then I try to weave this modern day tale around it, and hopefully that'll draw some attention that people will say this is pretty interesting. My hook is kind of that I use something real.
Right.
And I weave this tale around it, this modern day tale, and it's something that you kind of, when you finish the book, you go like, wow, I never really knew that. I mean, because I didn't know it when I started it, so that's one reason why I spent a year writing it.
It's very interesting. And you know, the thing that really, I guess, where a lot of this hinges is then Secretary of State, was it Knox?
Yeah, Lander Knox.
Yeah, and he declared the 16th Amendment in effect, but there's some terminology here. He didn't say it was ratified,
That's
did he?
That's a fascinating thing. You know, he did not say that. He specifically said, I only declare it in effect, not ratified. And that raises some interesting issues, particularly in light of a memorandum from the Solicitor General at the time that raised some questions with the ratification process. And that memorandum is real. It's an actual document. It was put together. So he had a legal opinion in front of him that said, yeah, you do have some problems here with this amendment ratification. But he went forward with it anyway.
Mm.
And there's some reasons why he did that, some very interesting political reasons why he went forward. As I told you, the amendment was supposed to fail, but it didn't. And the country was very different then. And I said, all of that's explored in the book. And I think when people get done, they're going to go like, you know, This may not be as crazy as I first thought it was.
Yeah. It never is once we understand something,
yeah.
right? And on a related point, I know that you did quite a bit of research, and there's an inclusion, and we certainly won't give away the whole story here, Steve, but a couple of other things I know that you got into that may pique people's interest, and it certainly was very curious to me, as you when you go back and look at the funding of the American Revolution, tell the story a little bit about that, about the money that was raised and how
yeah.
that came to be.
Well, it came from a man named Hyman Solomon, who actually went out and raised all of the money to fund the revolution. He actually loaned the country $800,000 of his own money. This was done on promissory notes. If he had not done this, there would have been no money available to finance the revolution. Washington himself recognized this and left a little remembrance of that in the Great Seal of the United States, which is dealt with in the novel, something very interesting in the Great Seal. But that $800,000 in loans that Hyman Solomon gave to the country have never been repaid.
Really?
Never. Five times Congress considered it. Five times they said no. Today, that debt could be worth as much as $300 billion.
Good grief.
That's what it would be, depending on how you want to quantitate the debt.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they never paid him back. In fact, the documentation on the debts mysteriously disappeared.
What do you know?
Yeah, just disappeared in the latter part of the 18th century. Solomon died in 1795, so he never really lived to see what actually came of the country. But Washington himself said we couldn't have done it without him.
Well, you know, I think you need to put Cotton Malone on the task and go find those documents.
Well, he is. He is. You're gonna see
I'm
that.
I'm gonna
in the
find
novel.
Out about that, huh?
He's after that. He's after that too, and you're gonna see all of that in place. I was fascinated by Hyman Solomon. He's one of those unsung heroes from the Revolution that we know very little about, but he was absolutely vital, because without money, we couldn't have done anything.
Well, and I think it's fitting that it certainly appears there's a tribute there on the dollar bill. And you made, I know that you did research on this as well. There's some peculiarities with the dollar bill that while the other different denominations of our currency have changed and be redesigned or things have gone on, there's been something done where the dollar bill can't be?
Yes. All of our currency has been altered and changed. As you know, in recent years, they've changed them all. But there's a specific act of Congress that says that the $1 bill can never be altered.
Mm.
So it's very fascinating. I came across it. It's part of it figures into the plot of the novel as well, and along with some interesting things on the dollar bill that may surprise people. It certainly surprised me, some of the stuff that's on the dollar bill. And I wove all of that in. It all sort of fit into the novel. But it is interesting that this one particular piece of currency has to stay exactly like it is. Now, I will say, for sake of it'd be interesting for the listeners to know, there's really nothing ominous about that. You know, do you know why they have that rule?
No.
It's real simple. The vending machine companies have lobbied hard. They don't want the dollar bill changed because they'd have to change out every vending machine.
That's true.
Because they use those readers.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do that, so they lobby Congress every time and shut it down.
Wow.
So there's really nothing ominous about it. It's just very interesting. It was just cool to have in. Now, I of course, use it in another way.
Sure,
but the reality is just simply politics.
Right. Well, and speaking of politics, we've got a minute left. You know, again, this whole thing is wrapped with a gigantic bow. Anytime we talk about taxes and all these different elements, the politics are a huge part of it. And it wasn't, you know, certainly a strong argument could be made today about taxes being used as a political weapon or tool. They certainly were back in the day, back when this was originally put forth and the income tax was created.
Oh, no question. It was pure, absolute politics. The Republicans wanted to be portrayed as not the party of the rich, so they proposed this amendment to tax these people with money, but they thought it would fail. It didn't fail, but then again, it might have failed.
Mm.
And it goes back and forth. There was an enormous amount of politics playing at this point in time because the country was moving away from a conservative Republican leadership to a progressive Democratic leadership with Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
And all of that was we were shifting at this point in time. Everything was very adapting. It was a very fluid time in American politics when this, and then of course the 16th Amendment comes into play.
Well, Steve, we'll have to have them read the book and be entertained and also educated. Steve Barry, ladies and gentlemen, The Patriot Threat, steveberry.org. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me. I hope everybody goes out and takes a look at the novel.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.